Now, friends, we come today to the sixth chapter of the book of Revelation, and actually this is the great watershed, the great divide of the book of Revelation. Here is a division that, let me say, is all important. I know traveling on old Highway 66 across northern New Mexico, you go through Albuquerque and Gallup, New Mexico, and Winslow, and then up to Flagstaff. Now, between Flagstaff and Winslow, there's a place called the Great Divide, or the Continental Divide, is the way I think they label it. I found the same thing over in Colorado, up at Berthoud Pass, and I'm told that in both of these places, you could drop a chip in a stream that is flowing toward the west, on the west side of the divide, and it would end up in the Pacific Ocean, or you could put a chip on the east side of the divide, and it would end up eventually in the Atlantic Ocean, by way of the Gulf of Mexico, of course. But this is a very important division, by the way. Very important. It actually separates those two chips, and they are worlds apart. That's what we have here in the sixth chapter of the book of Revelation. And the reason for that is that we've come to the third major division. Now, we said that at chapter 4, and actually there is where it is. But what happened in chapter 4? We found ourselves transferred to heaven. John was caught up, and we went right up with him because we began to see things in heaven. And we didn't see anything labeled the church, because the church was the name given to it down here. But we saw the 24 elders, and we went up with John, and the elders had to get up there some way. They were caught up, and they represent the church. And the church we find now in heaven. And it's no longer mentioned from here on in the book of Revelation on the earth at all. Oh, there's an invitation at the end that comes from the church, but that refers back to this day in which we live. But you have here an orderly process in the book of Revelation, and we need to follow Peter's rule for prophecy, that no prophecy of the Scriptures of any private interpretation. That is, you don't interpret it by itself. It must be looked at as a system and a program, and it must fit in with the others. Now, by the time you get to the sixth chapter, a great many forget that John gave to us an orderly division of the book of Revelation. He said back in Revelation 1:19, write the things, this is what he was told to do, the things which thou hast seen. And that was that glorious vision of the glorified Christ as the great high priest amidst the lampstands, where he's keeping the light burning here on the earth. And that's his picture. And then we were given the things that are. And we had seven churches, which represent the total earthly experience of the church, from the day of Pentecost to the parousia, from the upper room to the upper air, that this is the total history of the church on earth. Then he was told, and the things which shall be hereafter, metatauta. So we ended the earthly career of the church at the end of chapter 3. And then we were told, metatauta, after these things. And believe me, he mentioned it twice there. He couldn't get away from it. He did that for the benefit of those who hold a historic viewpoint of Revelation, the amillennialists today. He says, after this, metatauta, and he would show the things which must be hereafter. And that's metatauta. That's chapter 4, verse 1 of Revelation. So, beginning there, it was new. But the two chapters we had, 4 and 5, we were in heaven. We were there with John. And the first thing we saw was a throne, and the Lord Jesus is there. And he is the Lion of the tribe of Judah, who's sitting at God's right hand waiting till his enemies are made his footstool. down here. Then in chapter 5, he's the Lamb. And we see the emphasis upon his first coming, that he's the Lamb. But the Lamb is the one, because he's the Redeemer, that was able to take the book, which is the title deeds of this earth. And did you know that he's the only one that's able to judge this earth? And he's the only one that's able to judge it, not only because of who he is, he's God manifest in the flesh, but by what he's done. He created this earth, and that gives him a right. And he's worshipped in chapter 4 as the Creator. Then he also redeemed this earth, and we see that in chapter 5. He's worshipped as the Redeemer. Since he's the Creator and Redeemer, he's the only one worthy to judge this earth. He's the only one that's able to rule this earth. What a reflection upon the consummate conceit of little men down here who want to be judges. What right has the Supreme Court to judge anyone? What right has the Senate or the House of Representatives or the President to judge anyone? Who do they think they are today? May I say to you, who is worthy to sit in judgment? It's the Lord Jesus Christ. He alone is worthy. And until one of these boys can measure up to him, they are not really in a position to judge in their own ability and strength. And any human judge down here that does not look to God is not worthy to sit on any bench and judge anyone. And that would even be a police court today. And may I say to you that the injustice that's on this earth is brought about because a little man sitting in judgment on others. Jesus Christ is worthy. And that's the picture that is given to us as we close that chapter.